Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of learning more about energy. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. But before I introduce my entire panelist, I'd like for you to meet R. Dale Tull, Project and Process Manager of Mobil Oil Company in Fairfax, Virginia.
First of all, Stephanie, I'd like to thank you for inviting me here today. I've been involved with in the energy business for some 28 years, and we really have a problem in America today. If we go back several years ago, let's go back about 40 years ago, this country, America, was self-sufficient in energy. As a matter of fact, we sold energy to other countries. But as the years went by, things changed. For example, in 1960, we imported about 10% of all the oil that we consumed. In 1968, it was 20%. In 1973, when we had the Arab embargo, it was one-third of all the oil that we consumed, we imported. And in 1978, it was about 50%. And during the last 2 years, with the higher prices and the recession, we're importing less, but we're still importing about 40% of all the oil energy that we need. And that's the problem. We're so dependent on other countries for our energy needs. And it's important that America becomes more self-sufficient in energy. And that's what we have to work at.
To elaborate on the subject, my other guest is Jim Buck, Director of Media Community Relations at VEPCO in Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Exactly what is energy?
Well, energy is the thing that we use basically as an integral part in our daily lives to power our transportation, to feed our homes, so to speak, to get ourselves going.
In Mr. Tull's opening statement, he mentioned the problem that exists. Exactly how would you define the problem from the standpoint of VEPCO?
Well, from our standpoint, it's a twofold kind of thing. Really, the energy problem is more of an economic and political problem than anything else. We've got a number of sources of energy available here in this country. It is possible, if we all work together, to become more self-sufficient as far as energy goes in the next 20 to 30-year period.
What will that mean for VEPCO if we become more self-sufficient?
Well, basically for us, well, really it means more for the country as a whole. We have a tremendous amount of coal here in this country that we can use. We're really what you might call the Saudi Arabia of coal, so to speak, in the world. We ship a tremendous amount of coal out of our ports. Hampton Roads is a tremendously large port in Virginia. They send coal out every day. As far as us as a utility and what happens in Virginia, the couple of the things that we're trying to do is to convert our generators where we can from oil firing to coal firing, and we've been very successful in being able to do that. Another thing that we've tried to do for many, many years is get more nuclear power into our mix of generation. This year, about 40% of the electricity that Virginians buy will be from a nuclear generator. Another 40% or so will be from a coal-fired generator, and the rest is made up from oil-fired power and hydroelectric power.
What are the advantages of transferring from oil to coal?
Well, basically, the advantage is we want to price more than anything else, not to mention the fact that in getting off of or using less oil for us as a company, it helps the overall problem in this country. But for the customer, what it means is we can generate a kilowatt hour of electricity from a nuclear generator at about 3 cents. We can generate it at a coal generator at about 3.5 cents, and an oil-fired generator at about 7 cents. So the less oil we use, of course, reduces the price of what we're feeding to the customer.
Mr. Tull, do you have a response to that?
No, I think that's what Jim has talked about is a very accurate assessment in getting along with solving this problem. What Jim mentioned is that there's two avenues that we have to approach. One is we are and we need to conserve more today. And we're buying more efficient cars, we're insulating our homes, putting in storm windows. We're using less energy, and that's part of the answer. But the other part, in order to satisfy the utilities' needs and other industrial needs and the consumer, we have to increase the energy supply. And if we just look at the energy that we consume in America today, there's really only four sources that make up over 90% of the energy, and it's coal, oil and gas, coal, and nuclear. And you add those up, and they amount to well over 90% of all the energy that we consume. And as Jim mentioned, we're blessed with coal. We have over a 300-year supply of coal at its present consumption rates. And we need to increase coal usage, coal-burning boilers and power plants. And also we need to expand nuclear more than we are today in our view. Because, you know, we're going to be relying on oil and gas for many years in the future. But as the decades roll by, they're going to decline in availability. And so we're going to have to rely more on coal and nuclear. And if we don't have a major incident, a major war or something, we can get by the way we are for several decades. But as the years roll by, we're going to have to depend more on these other energy sources. And we're blessed with so much coal, and we're blessed with so much nuclear capability, and we need to expand those. But in addition to these existing energy sources, we have to develop new energy sources, such as solar, geothermal, tar sands, and the rest. And we need to do these hand in hand because we need to become more self-sufficient to become and remain a strong America.
I'm glad you brought up the issue of nuclear power. There have been so many different segments of the population within the United States that is in opposition to nuclear power. What is your answer to those persons?
Well, basically, nuclear, for what we've seen, is very safe. The plants, what you've got basically in a nuclear generator is one of the most sophisticated, complex pieces of machinery that man can engineer. And not only do you have that piece of machinery, but you have 2 and 3 backups for safety reasons on every function that particular generator takes care of. It's a very safe operation. One of the problems with nuclear power is where it came from, basically. It came from a weapons program. It came from a war program. And, of course, that started during World War II, and then we moved out of World War II into what President Eisenhower called turning nuclear into plowshares, so to speak. We have a tremendous amount of uranium in this country that we can use. Method also exists to be able to breed more uranium or more nuclear fuel that you can use. The one problem that we have to address, and we have to address that fairly quickly, is what do we do with the waste? We have a tremendous volume of waste in this country. Most of it is not from nuclear generators. Most of it is from the weapons program. It's here. We've got to do something with it regardless of which way we go as far as energy goes. So we really have to address that problem. And one thing that Dale mentioned is we need to move into some of these other energy sources. We look in Virginia for solar within the next 20 years to become a very valuable partner, not in generating electricity per se, but in people using it to heat their homes.
People are familiar with the terminology solar, yet you mentioned 3 or 4 other sources. Would you care to expound upon that?
Well, one source of alternate fuel that is going to be developed, we feel, quite rapidly is shale oil. If you go to Colorado in the surrounding states, we have a tremendous quantity of energy locked in rocks. In order to get the oil out, the conventional way is to take this rock, grind it up, heat it up, boil out the oil. But we have as much energy in oil shell, twice as much energy as oil shell, as Saudi Arabia does in conventional oil. And it just has to be developed and produced. Now, the first mine and upgrader plant will be coming on stream in 1983, and they'll be followed about every year or two after that. It's a big challenge. It's a tremendous investment for the industry, but it's going to come about and it's going to help solve the problem. And but looking down the road many decades, I think we have to really think and accelerate the production of alternate fuels or renewable fuels such as nuclear and solar, because we can get by and maybe our kids can get by. But if we look after the turn of the century, when hydrocarbon fuels become less in supply, we're going to be dependent on the sun, and we're going to be dependent on nuclear power, and we've got to start developing those and improving that technology today.
What caused the problem? Where has America gone wrong?
Well, I think one of the main things is that Americans have not been informed. And they haven't understood the problem, but this is years ago. But now, today, over half the people in this country understand we have a problem. And that's the first thing to solving this problem, because when Americans understand we have a problem, they get behind it. Just for example, if you go back to World War II, I was just a kid. I had a paper route back in Wichita, Kansas. But I can remember back in those days that America got behind that war effort because there was a couple of nations that wanted to take over the world. They understood the problem, and we solved it. And the same way with energy. When Americans understand we have a problem, we're on our way to solving it.
So it's really been informational access.
That's correct, in my view.
That's one thing. It's basically an education type of thing. Plus, it's another problem that we've experienced with this is the energy situation has impacted tremendously on the economy, not just our economy as a country, but the world economy, so to speak. We went through a period in the 50s and 60s where we saw tremendous growth, just tremendous growth in everything. The economy was booming. Really, people looked at going through that period, saw that there would, or figured that there would never be a change to that. We got into the 70s, we had the OPEC oil embargo, which changed things drastically, and it really impacted on the economy in a way that for a while people tended to say, well, it's going to change back, we're going to be able to go back to that type of thing in the 50s and 60s. That's not going to happen. And I think it's taken really the decade of the 70s to look at that type of thing and bring people around to seeing that we are not going to be able to go back to that type of thing. Things are changing, and we're going to have to address what we're faced with and move on it. And I think we've arrived finally at that point where we are beginning as a country to move on those things, beginning to get kind of a more cohesive national energy attitude or policy, if you want to call it that way, to address these problems and move into the 21st century.
So many homeowners consistently say, I don't want an electric house because the cost is too exorbitant. Then they say, I don't want oil because it might not be around. We might not be able to get it. There might be a freeze. We won't be able to import. Then there's the theory, well, if I have a gas home, then the gas companies will not allow oil and electric to continuously get away with the high prices. So eventually, their day is coming when that price hike, too, is going to take place. How do you feel about that?
Well, basically, with the gas industry itself has kind of mixed feelings about deregulating the price of natural gas. Here in this country, what the gas industry sells, basically, they have to sell at a price lower than what we buy it from or what we are actually paying, say, the Canadians. For, you know, a volume of gas. There's kind of a discrepancy in that, but gas is in the process of being deregulated. As it stands right now, we, as an electric company, can compete very favorably with gas depending on how you heat your home, whether it's a heat pump. We can't really compete with them if you use some kind of resistance heating, because resistance heating in any form is fairly inefficient. As far as builders go, in this area right here, the metropolitan area of Washington has a tremendous volume of building going on, always has. You don't see a whole lot of oil furnaces going anymore. It's either electric or gas. And in the future, I think you're going to see an impact on various kinds of solar applications in residences. Right now, there's certain tax incentives attached to using solar or using wind, let's say, if you wanted to do that. As time goes on and as these things are used more and more, the price will come down. And it will become more prevalent.
I can't believe that the time is actually up and we haven't even barely touched the surface of the subject. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Production coordinator, Pat Ping. If you'd like further information about this program or our guest, please call area code 703-323-2139. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.